two presenters, Dr. Smith Ray and Ms. Amy Shaw, and they're going to be talking about fit and strong, plus physical activity, weight management, early findings.
Hi, everyone. I'm Renee Smith-Ray, and I'll be co-presenting with Amy. So I'll be starting off here, and we'll hand it over to Amy partway through. And just to state, we have neither Amy nor I have conflicts of interest to disclose. So I'm going to talk about the Fit and Strong, give you an overview of Fit and Strong and a very brief history of the program, and then next, after that, we'll move into the current work that we're doing with regard to Fit and Strong, which is a comparative effectiveness trial that looks at our customary Fit and Strong, which is primarily physical activity-based, to a new version that includes physical activity and dietary and weight management. Okay, so Fit and Strong was developed about 15 years ago. It's been through the entire research-to-practice spectrum, and I just want to point out, Amy and I are both, of course, members of the Fit and Strong team, and the developer, Sue Hughes, is back hiding, and actually she had to run out into the airport, so Amy and I are presenting on her behalf to give her a little bit of a break so that she can run for her plane. But what we found is that, actually I should say Sue in her early work found that with a cohort of 600 older adults in Chicago, they found that arthritis was the number one cause of disability within these individuals, and in particular, lower extremity joint impairment was the strongest risk factor for that disability. So we know that older adults with osteoarthritis have decreased aerobic functioning and decreased muscle strength. So, you know, if you can imagine this cycle, makes a lot of sense because these individuals have a lot of joint pain, so they stop moving. And what happens when they stop moving, their muscles become deconditioned. And we know that by actually having that lower extremity muscle strength, that allows us to take the extra weight off of those, or pressure off of those weight-bearing joints of the hips and the knees. So it's really a vicious cycle. Once you become deconditioned, it's really the worst thing you could do for your arthritis. So the conclusion of this longitudinal study was that clearly we need an intervention to target these older adults that have osteoarthritis. We know that any good intervention should involve, should be theoretically based, and we feel very strongly about social cognitive theory. Our research, as well as that of many others, has found that elements of social cognitive theory, in particular self-efficacy, are really tremendously important to facilitating behavior change, including adherence. So these are some of the elements of social cognitive theory that may be hard for you to see in the back, but most of these elements we've built into the program, which is goal setting, working on self-efficacy, so your belief that you can actually achieve the attainable results that will make a difference in your life and your health, outcome expectations, so that's having very realistic expectations for how these changes, to what level these changes will occur and how they'll affect your health, social modeling, knowledge, and also identifying barriers and facilitators to behavior change. So what is Fit and Strong? Fit and Strong, as I said, it was first developed about 15 years ago. It's a multiple component physical activity program that is targeted toward older adults with lower extremity osteoarthritis. It's an 8-week program. It's delivered 3 sessions per week, and each session is an hour and a half long. So during the first hour, that's all physical activity. This is where we do the cardiovascular work, we do flexibility, and we also do strength training, concentrating on those lower extremity muscles. The last 30 minutes is a group discussion, and this is a manual-based program. So each session has particular content that we discuss for that day. The instructors are all trained, which we don't have time, unfortunately, to go into in detail today, but all of our instructors are very carefully trained as to how to lead these discussions. And this is really where we bring in a lot of those social cognitive theory elements. At week 6 of the program, each one of our participants sits down one-on-one with the instructor and creates a very specific adherence contract where they talk through exactly their plans for maintaining physical activity after the end of the 8-week program. So we try to give them the toolkit to help them create a lifelong pattern of physical activity. So we ask them to identify when they're going to exercise. You know, are they going out for a walk every evening after dinner? Who they'll be exercising with? What happens when it rains? Then what will you do? To have backup plans when these barriers get in the way, and identifying what those real common barriers are. So I mentioned this has been through the research to practice spectrum. The efficacy trial was conducted in the late 90s, early 2000s. That was a randomized controlled trial, and the objective of that was first to demonstrate that it works and then also to demonstrate that this program is safe. After that, we conducted an effectiveness trial, which is a large trial at community-based sites in the Chicago area, and we looked at maintenance of activity out to 18 months. So very briefly, I just want to tell you that with both of these trials, we were really quite glad about the terrific outcomes we saw, and the outcomes not only immediately post-program, which was 2 months, but also that a lot of these outcomes were maintained out to 6 and 12 months or even improved at that time. So this is just a very brief overview of what some of those significant findings were with our effect sizes, but essentially you'll see that exercise improved and was maintained out to 18 months. Also, pain, so that's from the Jerry Ames scale, so arthritis-related pain, improved out to 6 and 12 months. Pain, another measure of pain and stiffness from the WOMAC, and total exercise minutes at the very bottom. So this is depicted just a bit differently, but this is from the effectiveness trial. That trial consisted of 486 older adults. Like I said, this was a trial conducted, this was in the early 2000s at Chicago area senior centers. And again, what we found with this trial was fortunately a significant increase in physical activity, caloric expenditure, lower extremity stiffness, pain, physical function, also measures of anxiety and depression improved in this trial as well. So, and again, these were maintained out to 18 months, and I do want to stress that the program was 8 weeks, so we're really glad, you know, I'm very proud that these we've had these effects out to 18 months. So where is the program now? The current state of the program is that it's a licensed program. It's been quite broadly disseminated. We don't have a slide on this, but we actually conducted a dissemination trial after the effectiveness trial that was funded by the CDC. And as part of that trial, we disseminated the program broadly. So at this point, we have over 200 instructors trained, a number of T and master trainers. Those are like our lead trainers. We have implemented at over 60 sites, over 4,100 participants. We're right now in 6 states, and we do have a Hispanic version of the program that we've tested. The entire program and manual has been translated to Spanish and back translated. And we're also right now participating in the CMS evaluation, which for those of you that don't know, we are absolutely thrilled, hallelujah, that the CMS is finally looking at cost effectiveness of health promotion programs. Fit and Strong, being an evidence-based program, was one of a handful of programs that they selected to be evaluated as part of this. So what that means is over the next year, we will be enrolling 2,000 participants in Fit and Strong, and there's a very careful prospective study that is occurring with these participants looking at their Medicare records for years following their participation in the program to determine whether having someone complete a physical activity program like this is actually cost savings, which of course we all believe it is and know deep down inside it is, but we've never had those hard numbers to demonstrate that. So the ultimate goal is that one day, you know, the Medicare will begin reimbursing these programs. So now we're going to transition into our current work, and I'm going to finish this last slide and hand it over to Amy. So, okay, so our more recent developments with the program, we think this program's phenomenal. We've, you know, our participants really seem to love it, but we do know with the obesity epidemic, there's been a bit of, you know, as you all are aware, I'm preaching to the choir here, that the obesity has become a tremendous problem, particularly over the last few decades. Now we're at a point where 35% of our older adults are obese. And we do know that there is this relationship, a synergy with obesity and osteoarthritis, where obesity exacerbates those osteoarthritis symptoms for the reasons that I explained a little earlier. The heavier, the more body weight and more pressure you're putting on those arthritic joints, the more pain and swelling you're going to have. So, you know, we know that this is leading to incredible healthcare costs. This is really spiraling into a whole, you know, the obesity and arthritis, you know, synergy here is really spiraling into a major public health issue. So we decided that we needed to do something about this and put together a program that also incorporates weight management strategies. In particular, within that group discussion, that last 30 minutes of the program is very heavy on dietary management and intake. So now I'm going to hand it over to Amy to talk about our initial results from that comparative effectiveness trial.
Thank you, Renee. All right, so now I'm going to talk about the comparative effectiveness trial. Okay, and we're pretty much, the purpose of this trial is to examine if, you know, adding a weight management dietary change component, if that's going to be more effective. It's a five-year-long study, and it's funded by the National Institute on Aging. We've our goal is to enroll 400 participants, and we've, you know, and there's pretty much 200 to the customary group and 200 to the Fit and Strong Plus group. That's the one with the weight and management component. Our purpose is to address the comparative impact of the two programs at baseline, 2 months, 6 months, 12 months, and 18 months on our primary outcomes and our secondary outcomes. Our primary outcomes look at dietary changes at 8 weeks and 5% weight loss at 6 months that is maintained at to 18 months. And our secondary outcomes look at exercise participation, lower extremity pain, stiffness, and function, strength, aerobic capacity, self-efficacy for eating and physical activity behaviors, and anxiety and depression. So here is our study design. Once our participants complete their baselines, they're randomly assigned. Then they're stratified by BMI and arthritis severity. They're randomized into either one of the two programs, the customary Fit and Strong program or Fit and Strong Plus. They undergo the 8-week-long intervention, and there are several other outcome assessments that take place after their baseline interview. They have a 2-month post-test, a 6-month follow-up, a 12-month follow-up, and 18-month follow-up. All these interviews are exactly the same. In addition to these outcome assessments, they have telephone reinforcements that take place at month 4, 8, and 15. The purpose of doing these telephone reinforcements is to make sure the participants are still engaging in the behavior changes that they've learned during the program, making sure that they're still physically active, and if they were in the Fit and Strong Plus group, that they're still maintaining their dietary intake, looking at the different food groups and eating healthy. Looking at our measures. So we have the physical activity scale for the elderly, and that's PACE for short, and for that we assess the exercise participation. We also use the food block frequency questionnaire to assess the dietary intake. We do ask for the BMI, and that's calculated based on their height and weight, and we also look at waist circumference. We do use questions from the WOMAC to assess their lower extremity pain, stiffness, and physical function. We do the 6-minute distance walk to address their aerobic capacity, the 30-second chair stand, and the Jerry Ames. So once again, you know, the program is 8 weeks long, and I'm not going to go further in terms of the components, but you know, the first hour is the exercise component, and then where the two programs differ is the health education. Fit and strong customary group, they learn more about physical activity and arthritis management, while the Fit and Strong Plus group, in addition to learning about the other two, they also learn about healthy eating and healthy weight maintenance. So the weight management component, this is adapted by the diabetes prevention program, and participants are advised to follow an individualized USDA MyPlate plan based on their baseline weight, and this also promotes healthy weight loss. They're also taught how to fill out food diary logs, and this component addresses self-efficacy and diet behaviors, and it focuses on behavioral approaches to promote and maintain weight loss. In addition to keeping food diary logs, they're also asked to create shopping lists, healthy recipes, looking at cooking substitutions, and so forth. Baseline characteristic. This is for our first 7 cohorts, and as you can see, they're very similar to each other. The mean age is 68. They're mainly female. Their health conditions, in addition to arthritis, they have chronic conditions. They face high blood pressure, diabetes. Their median income is very similar to each other, and also their education level. These are additional demographic characteristics for our baseline participants for the first 7 cohorts. And just want to highlight real quick is that both the groups, they're in more in the obese range. And when it comes to their arthritis severity, they mildly experience pain, stiffness, and mildly address the degree of difficulty of physical function. Here are our retention rates for the first 3 cohorts. So this is our participant study outcomes for the first cohorts, and we've seen significant changes from baseline to post-intervention when it comes to weight, BMI, the lower extremity stiffness and physical function, and also the 6-minute distance walk. And then from baseline to 6 months, we have seen significant changes in weight, BMI, and lower extremity physical function. One thing I really want to highlight over here is that because it's a comparative trial and we're comparing 2 interventions, it's harder to see significant changes, you know, as opposed to if we were comparing it to intervention to a control. But we've seen dramatic, like really good changes within the group, but in the Fit and Strong Plus group, compared to the customary. And once again, I have some bar charts that really gives you an overview of the significant changes when it comes to weight and BMI. And just want to just highlight, it is in the negative direction. There is a negative sign on it. I know it looks positive, but no, it's negative. And the Fit and Strong Plus group has also experienced decrease in lower extremity pain, stiffness, and also degree of physical function. Same thing with the 30-second chair stands. We've actually seen an increase in chair stands and 6-minute distance walk in the Fit and Strong Plus group compared to the customary group. Here are some of our data from the dietary intake. We use the food frequency block questionnaire, and as you can see, from baseline to post-test, there has been a significant increase in vegetables, especially in orange vegetables from baseline to post-test, and then out to 6 months, it's really encouraging that our Fit and Strong Plus group has been taking in more green vegetables, dark vegetables. It's very encouraging to see these changes. So in conclusion, both Fit and Strong and Fit and Strong Plus group are effective within groups at 6 months when it comes to lower extremity pain, 30-second chair stands, and physical activity. But the addition of weight management seems to achieve even better results compared to the customary group when we talk about the weight, BMI, and the degree of physical function. So our next steps are that our enrollment is still ongoing. So we've enrolled 225 participants, and out of the 400, and we're going to be analyzing the duration of benefits by group for the month 12 and 18 month follow-ups. And yep, thank you. And so Renee and I, we would like to take any questions if you have any. Yep. So recruitment is, I would say, difficult because it is harder to get these older adults to actively participate, and they really shy away when we use the word research study. So we really have to explain that, you know, it's benefit to the community. Just like we did with the customary Fit & Strong, our whole goal is to give back. And, you know, they always want to make sure that they're not just there just for the research purpose and nothing comes back into their community. So we always emphasize that our end goal is to, that once Fit & Strong Plus shows the effectiveness, that we really want to roll this out back into the community. There is, we do provide incentive. We do give a minimal amount for completing the follow-up interviews. However, you know, it's more of like we make in-person presentations. We always make sure that we do that so we can address any questions that they have versus just doing passive recruitment where we pass out flyers. We've realized that in-person interviews or presentations are just so much more effective. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Okay. An ongoing, it's something that they can continue with after the 8 weeks. Yeah, that's an excellent question. Well, Sue is a very active member of a relatively new group called the Evidence-Based Leadership Council that is a group of eight, perhaps, I think, if I have that number correct, health promotion programs. And, you know, I think the ultimate public health goal is to begin partnering you know, have our older adults transition from one evidence-based program to another. So, you know, the earlier presenters described how Enhanced Fitness, for instance, is an ongoing program. We see, you know, even these two programs fitting together where participants may start in Fit & Strong, get that, you know, get those routines, learn what physical activities are appropriate, how much they need. You know, get the social cognitive elements in place and then perhaps use a program like Enhanced Fitness to maintain over time. You know, ideally, and we're also partnering with Matter of Balance in some states and CDSMP. So we're really beginning, this is relatively new for us, we're beginning these bundling of evidence-based programs.
Yeah.
I'll note that with Matter of Balance, our same question comes up, that after the 8 weeks of the program, what's next?
Yeah, and I also would like to say just very quickly that we're an exploratory aim of this study. We're looking at balance as an outcome because we've never looked at how Fit & Strong impacts balance, which we're very excited about. That's another hat I wear as a researcher. I do a lot of falls prevention work, and there's every reason to believe this will help balance, and we're hoping to have that data soon.
Can I open it up, though, to everyone on this questions as well as others? And I think the I first wanted to make sure to give them a hand for their explanation. Please invite everyone up. And again, let's now open it up for questions that you may have, anything. And I do think the whole issue of, I think this is sort of like phase one of getting the evidence-based programs, looking at their efficacy, looking at their effectiveness, and trying to roll them out. And the next generation will be connecting all of these pieces across them and looking at what programs are right for what older adults with what conditions and doing that. So I think excellent, excellent question. Other questions, please, in the back.
How do we identify partner sites? That's a good question. You know, that's been really sort of an iterative process. I think earlier on, we still have very strong partnerships with our Chicago area senior centers and recreation centers. Our comparative effectiveness trial, we're partnered with Chicago Parks and Recs, which has, as you can imagine, many, many sites. The dissemination trial, the CDC trial, we focus primarily on Illinois and North Carolina and disseminating through those states. Now, what we're actively always working on is kind of getting in. We know that dissemination is most effective when you can work at a systems level. So we're very actively working on trying to build those partnerships at a systems level, such as with AAAs. So that's something that we're currently doing as well. But, you know, our sites run the gamut. We've been in independent living facilities. We've been in health clinics. As I mentioned, parks and recs. And then Hispanic, you mentioned about that. You know, we learned through that. We had pilot funding, and we realized that translating a program like this takes a tremendous amount of resources. I think we underappreciated that at first, but now we very much appreciate that. But, you know, that program is ready to go, which we are very much interested in disseminating that more broadly right now. And we're also working in Portugal currently, and we'll soon, within the next year, hopefully be disseminating the program in Lithuania as well. So we're really looking to kind of expand more globally.
Something comes along, like a new chronic illness, like going into the hospital. Restarting is a big problem. You need programs for re-entry into healthy living.
Well, I think a real opportunity is the work that CMS is currently doing with their CMMI programs on care transitions. And so connecting many of our evidence-based programs to care transition programs, I think, is also another really important effort. And as they begin to roll out, you know, these CMMI demonstrations that are touching on many of the important issues that you're doing today, I can really see some important synergies. That would be a wonderful symposium here at APHA next year. And the last question, I'll
I have a question. I just wanted to know, because somebody was asking, what about after that program is done? We were doing, you know, a longitudinal study. We were doing this telephone interview with the participants, and we do ask some participants, are you interested in the refresher course?
And right in with the Florida programs, they were also connecting to many clinical. And we'll let you have the last word, and then we'll let people come up and talk. Right, and particularly there's just some wonderful interventions in the caregiving, care partner world in doing case management, and many of them are connecting to some safety and referral kinds of mechanisms. So, again, those interconnectedness are the things of the future. So thank you so much. I think it was an excellent, and again, thank these excellent presenters.